So this call to follow Jesus that he makes so often across the pages of the gospel is, of course, central to our own lives as well. This profound sense of all that Jesus is inviting us into. As he goes along, he's always inviting people to join him along this journey. Here at chapter 9, verse 51 of the Gospel of Luke, we have this decisive turning point. Until this stage of the gospel, all of the ministry of Jesus is taking place in the north, up and around Galilee. But now he knows. He's just predicted again about his passion, that this is where this journey is heading. It's going to the cross. And so he sets his face resolutely towards Jerusalem. And the story of being rebuked, being denied entry by the Samaritan village is a sign of just how determined Jesus was to make his way as quickly as possible to Jerusalem, because going through Samaria was the most direct route along the way. But no, he needs to go a slightly longer way. But still, this whole sense of this is this journey that he is now embarking upon. And Luke will remind us five more times that Jesus is now making his way to Jerusalem. This sense of determination is so strong in him. And so Jesus continues to preach about the kingdom of God and this call for us to be part of this experience as well. So the kingdom of God is central to the teaching and the preaching of Jesus, and we're called to follow him as well. Now, one of the things that we need to make sense of is what it meant for Jesus to talk about the kingdom, what it meant for Jesus to talk about his Father in terms of this messianic desire and this longing that was there. At the time of all this, there was deep social unrest that was present in the community. And so there was this very turbulent sense of a sea that was racked with the violence that was so often unleashed by the Roman soldiers. The Jewish historian Josephus tells us of several of these incidents of mass brutality by the soldiers against the Jewish people. But we can presume that Josephus was only scratching the surface on the kinds of events that were unfolding. And so there was this sense of fear and anxiety because of the Roman occupation. Taxation was extraordinarily high in sense of the people were just so oppressed by both the Romans and then their own system of the need to support the ongoing development of the temple area that King Herod was in unleashing upon the people. And so this was leading to all kinds of tensions within the community. No one really liked the Romans being there, but some were profiting from it. So the Sadducees were being able to feather their own nests within the sense of being able to cooperate. And then, of course, you had others who were wanting to overthrow the Roman occupation. And so there was this powerful sense of, although more than 500 years before, the Jewish people had returned from exile, they hadn't yet experienced that freedom. They weren't able to establish their own kingdom except for a few brief and fleeting moments. And so all of these senses of the longing to go back to those great days of King David, all of that is underlying this sense that was there in the presence of Jesus' ministry. And so indeed, there was this truth, as the prophets proclaimed, that God would become king, that there was only one God and one creator of all. And so there was this strong sense of this longing to overthrow anything that wouldn't allow the people as a whole to be free. And so when Jesus went through those back alleys and along the streets and the little villages, he would have heard of all of these whispers. He would have heard all of these senses as the people shared their grief and their anxiety. And Jesus' proclamation fed right into the very center of that. So as Jesus spoke about becoming the king, there are many things that he didn't speak about. And so when he preached, it wasn't because he was talking about people just being nice to each other. You know, people didn't leave their work and forsake a day's wages in order to go and to listen to this itinerant teacher from Nazareth speaking and preaching about just being nice to each other. They already knew that from the Jewish law. They already had enough from their teaching to know that that was at the heart of what it was to be a better human being. All of that was already central within the Jewish understanding. And so they didn't need all of that. Unfortunately, we've often reduced the teaching of Jesus to just that sense of just, well, it's all about just being kind and nice and loving to each other. No, what Jesus was saying was so much more than that. And it wasn't just speaking about this possible future joy in heaven. Again, the Jewish people already had that expectancy and that sense of hope that yes, God was a God of justice, and so he would set right the world, and that included the final culmination of all things in the resurrection of the dead. And so that belief was already there, nice and powerful and strong. And nor was the teaching of Jesus primarily focused on the personal release and the personal forgiveness of sins. Again, Judaism already had a system for that, established with that system of sacrifices, that you were able to be set free from your individual sins. Now, what Jesus was speaking about was indeed truly revolutionary and countercultural. It was setting all of that system on its head. Because what Jesus was on about was not just about my individual relationship with God, but about establishing this new sense of a kingdom, that this kingdom was at the heart of all that Jesus spoke about. And so, yes, he spoke often, or at least he demonstrated often, this inbreaking of the kingdom of God through actions like forgiving people's sins, healing the sick. But all of that was about this sense of, no, we're going to be saved and made whole, not as individuals, but as the whole community, as the whole people. And so he was about establishing this new reality. Israel already knew that it had been called into that. But Jesus was establishing within his own powerful demonstration of that, the reminder that Israel had fallen short, just as the church has often fallen short of our call to be the light of the world, to be that source of renewal, to be that leaven within community, to change people's hearts, to change our own hearts, to change our own experience. And so that long night of exile was indeed coming to an end, because this great day of liberation was dawning. I mean, it's the first preaching, the first teaching of Jesus when he arrives back there in Nazareth, quoting from Isaiah 61, that great declaration that the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord has anointed me to set the prisoners free, to allow the downcast to be raised up. This whole sense of this great liberation, yes, it includes personal salvation, it includes that sense of personal forgiveness of sins and healing and all those things, but the scope was so much wider, so much broader than just this narrow little individualism that, well, unfortunately, we've so often reduced it to. And so when Jesus resolutely sets his face towards Jerusalem, it's this call for us to also be part of this new way of life. This call to follow him involves setting aside anything else that is less than that, anything else that might reduce us and not allow us to experience that full flourishing of that freedom. And so, of course, it can be quite scary if some of those individuals that we meet in the gospel today experience, you know, that we want to do all kinds of other things in addition to the kingdom of God. But Jesus is saying, no, if you understand this, if you encounter me, if you know the power of my love, then everything else will naturally fall into its secondary, lesser place than this possibility of experiencing the full flourishing of life with God. Jesus will often say to people, to the disciples after that he's been raised from the dead, but often along the way, And it's one of those continuing voices that we hear across the pages, both of the Old Testament and the New. Indeed, the number one commandment that we hear from the lips of God or of the messengers of God is not something about just, you know, being nice to each other or getting our lives in order, but it's this call to say, do not be afraid. Come into that full experience of life. Come and experience all that God has prepared for you. Because God is inviting us into this experience of abundance, that fullness of life that we can only know when we know the Lord. That He's there inviting us, calling us to say to us, come on, be part of this great transformation, be part of this society and community that knows its freedom, that knows its place, that is able to experience being loved and forgiven and allow that to change and transform not just us, but of course the whole of the community. That's what this is all about. This kingdom is about changing not just us, but the whole of the world. Paul told us that today in our second reading, when he reminded us so strongly that for freedom, Christ has set us free. So often we continue just to get locked into our own little world. We get locked into that own experience. But God is always calling us into that full flourishing, to let go of the chains, to not allow that yoke of slavery to be the very center of our experience. Galatians 5:1 is such a powerful text, or a powerful reminder to us of that freedom that God is constantly calling us and inviting us into. Every single one of us here is being invited by the Lord to follow Him, invited by the Lord to get rid of anything that will allow us to cling to the past and to find that freedom and that perfection in relationship, in that union with God, that relationship that will change and transform us, not just as individuals, but as the whole community, the whole group of God's people. Let's indeed allow the Lord to call us and really see how we might respond to the Lord today.